Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, September 14th. I'm asking you to please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, emails, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. And let's start with announcements. Here's a quick note from the Earth First Journal. They say, we're still here, we just don't have power. Our community was fortunate enough to be spared the worst of Hurricane Irma, but we are still without power. If you have tried to get a hold of the Earth First Journal in the past several days, we'll be back to you as soon as the power is back on. In the meantime, we are helping to coordinate grassroots disaster relief efforts and get supplies to parts of the state that were harder hit. We'll be back soon as we can manage. Thanks. A little message from the Earth First Journal staff. And coming up is the Environmental Protection Information Center's 40th Fall Celebration, this year featuring music by Casey Neal, Alice DiMicelli, and Joanne Rand. And that's going to be taking place on November 3rd at the Mateel Community Center in Redway, California. You're cordially invited to celebrate 40 years of grassroots activism for forest and wildlife protection at the Epic Fall Celebration. We are very pleased to present musical activists Casey Neal and the Norway Rats, Alice DiMicelli and Joanne Rand, who will be sure to take us on a trip back in time to the roots of the North Coast environmental movement. Joanne Rand will play her sultry tunes during an organically, locally sourced gourmet dinner. And there'll be all sorts of nice stuff to eat. During the dinner, we will be honoring the late Judy Berry with the Semper Virens Lifetime Achievement Award, which will be presented to her daughters Jessica and Lisa in recognition of Judy Berry's renowned environmental labor and social justice leadership. Her activism with Earth First and the philosophy of nonviolent protest set the tone for success of the Redwood Summer and future direct action movements against corporate logging. Judy Berry was far more than simply an environmentalist. She was an avid advocate for workers and the rights of working people. In addition to being a prominent member of Earth First, Judy was also a member of the Industrial Workers of the World, or IWW, or Wobblies, if you want to call them that, and spent tremendous time and energy not only working to slow the destruction of the last old-growth forests, but also to organize and cooperate with timber and mill workers, many of whom knew and understood the consequences of the destruction of the forest would also mean the end of their jobs and their way of life. After the awards, we will have a throwback experience dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations with Casey Neal, the Norway Rats, and Alice DiMicelli. Volunteers are needed to help with the production of the event. If you're interested in getting involved, please email Amber at wildcalifornia.org or give her a call at 707-822-7711. That's Amber at wildcalifornia.org or 707-822-7711. And that's the Epic's 40th Fall Celebration happening on Friday, November 3rd from 6 to midnight at the Mateel Community Center in Redwood, California. For tickets and more information, go to www.wildcalifornia.org. And the second Niles Canyon Stroll and Roll will be held on Saturday, September 30th. This one-day event was initiated in 2015 by Alameda County Supervisors Richard Valley and Scott Haggerty in an effort to promote an initiative to create a Class 1 trail through Niles Canyon. The stroll and roll is an opportunity to walk and or bike through Niles Canyon without any vehicular traffic. From 7 to 8 a.m., the road will be closed to all vehicles and open only to cyclists. And from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., the road will be open to all pedestrians and cyclists to stroll and roll through. There will be two rest stops within the canyon that will have portable restrooms, water, and chairs. On the Fremont side, the road will be closed at Mission Boulevard and Niles Canyon Road, and the Sunol side will be closed from Main Street and Niles Canyon. For more information and maps and parking, go to www.84strollroll.com. That's www.84strollroll.com. And the San Francisco Board of Supervisors last week upheld an appeal of the environmental review of the San Francisco Public Utility Commission's Alameda Creek Recapture Project. The supervisors unanimously voted to reopen the environmental impact report to address operational impacts of the project on stream flow and steelhead trout. The supervisors directed SFPUC and the SF Planning Commission to work with state and federal fish agencies and watershed stakeholders on additional analysis of the relationship between groundwater and surface water in the Sunol Valley to determine whether the recapture project has impacts on stream flows in Alameda Creek downstream of the project, which could impede steelhead migration. The evaluation will also be peer-reviewed by independent scientists. And Caltrans has begun exploratory geotechnical drilling near the Alameda Creek Bridge in the middle of Niles Canyon. Caltrans is also doing some tree trimming to access several locations in and around Alameda Creek for the drills. Caltrans has identified 21 individual trees, 13 coastal live oak, 5 western sycamore, 2 red willow, and a buckeye that have the potential to be pruned to allow for access to the drilling locations. The drill rig will require some areas of temporary ground disturbance where vegetation will be covered with heavy fabric and covered with temporary road base gravel. The base fabric and gravel ensures efficient and thorough removal of the gravel when work is completed. All off-road and off-pavement work will cease prior to November 30th, and all work near the creek will cease prior to October 15th. Those dates are specified in the environmental compliance permits for the drilling. Caltrans also has an emergency project to install rock capture and deflection fence material on the upslope hill along Niles Canyon, about a mile or so west of the bridge. This is a separate project that is already underway. And for more information, go to AlamedaCreek.org. That's AlamedaCreek.org. And from Friends of the Earth, we read that on September 1st, 6 peasant farmers were murdered in the Peruvian Amazon. All the evidence suggests the massacre was part of a violent campaign to evict local farmers and indigenous communities to make way for industrial palm oil plantations. We need your help to stop the violence against the people on the front lines of protecting our environment and their communities. This is the latest act of violence in the Acuyali region of Peru, a region known for land trafficking. Land trafficking is a corruption racket where criminal gangs use violence to take control of forested lands, then get regional authorities to give them land titles, then they sell the land to agribusiness companies, which in turn plant palm oil. For the communities that were attacked on September 1st, the danger is not over. The same group that allegedly carried out the massacre has been threatening a nearby Shipibo indigenous community. Even worse, the group has help from the local police. Peruvian authorities could step in and stop land trafficking, but so far they've done nothing. This massacre occurred 3 years to the day after the killing of human rights activist Edwin Choda and several indigenous Ashaninka forest defenders, and that crime has still not been properly investigated. This sends a signal to palm oil companies and land grabbers they can carry out violence with no accountability. This cycle has to end, and Friends of the Earth is asking you to go to their webpage, www.foe.org, where you can click online to take further action. And we read from the Earth First Journal Newswire, Into the Trenches, Pipeline Sabotage in Hamilton, Ontario, from Anarchist News. Pipelines are war, one built from the insatiable greed of corporations which have normalized violence against the land and its living. Our resolve within this struggle intensifies with each audacious assault Enbridge launches each time they dismiss the concerns and requests of indigenous nations. Every court proceeding, every act of intimidation, every lie or false claim of safety or necessity, we've had enough. So back when Enbridge started shipping in pipeline segments for their Line 10 expansion, we started sabotaging them. There are vast networks of pipeline infrastructure throughout Turtle Island. They are indefensible, perfect opportunities for effective direct action that harms nothing but an oil company's bottom line. It's in this spirit that we found ourselves going for long, moonlit strolls through the trenches of the freshly dug Line 10 right-of-way. Wherever we felt the urge, we drilled various-sized holes into pipeline segments that, while spilling corrosives inside of others. We do this in solidarity with the indigenous peoples of the area, a people who have been displaced, threatened, and murdered since early colonial arrivals, and who still continue to face this violence. They suffer the consequences of this colonial capitalist society and the industries that drive them. So, Enbridge, you're going to want to replace every last section of Line 10 that's been laid out so far. We say this because we care for the environment and don't care about you, so take it seriously. And for every dollar you pursue from indigenous nations or individuals for defending their territories, we aim to cost you 10. Hashtag sorry, not sorry. To the public, it's up to you to hold Enbridge accountable in everything they do. Don't let them risk your lives by installing pipelines that they now know to be compromised. Don't let them risk lives by installing pipelines, period. And last but not least, to our comrades and co-conspirators, a how-to from the heart. You'll need a decent cordless drill, a smaller gauge cobalt or titanium drill bit, preferably with a pilot point, and cutting oil. Oh, the irony. With a righteous sense of adventure, prove your stealth ninja skills by getting into the right-of-way. Once you're in there, you're pretty invisible from the road, so long as you're not fluorescent adorned with glitter or screwing around with a headlamp too much. Take a breath, take a look, and then find your way to an empty pipeline and start drilling. Go slow so there's less noise, reverberation, and friction, and apply just enough pressure so that you see metal shavings coming up, and then keep at it for 10 or 15 minutes. Cutting oil will help the process along by keeping the drill tip cool and effective. Have fun, stay safe, and then get out of there. And a fishing fleet has been caught red-handed in a dawn raid by Sea Shepherd and the East Timor National Police in this story from Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. A joint operation conducted at dawn on September 9th by the marine conservation group Sea Shepherd Global and the East Timor National Police resulted in the capture of Hong Long Fisheries Ping Tan Marine Enterprises fishing fleet at anchor off the coast of Kham, East Timor. At the request of the National Police, Sea Shepherd's patrol vessel, the motor yacht Ocean Warrior, and its small fast boat delivered armed police to board the vessels, along with drones to document the operation. Once the vessels were secured by the Timorese National Police, Sea Shepherd crew members assisted in documenting the catch on board, confirming suspicions that the fleet were targeting sharks as opposed to broad-scale fishing. After hunting for the fleet of 15 vessels for the past 2 weeks, the Ocean Warrior found them 150 kilometers south of East Timor, fishing with anchored gill nets set to target bottom-dwelling species such as sharks. Sea Shepherd documented the vessels retrieving their nets, and the catch appeared to be 95% sharks, as well as lots of broken coral. The same fleet were documented in East Timor in February, offloading massive quantities of sharks to a mothership, the Funyan Yu Leng 999. Although there was public outcry at the time, little or no action was taken. The Funyan Yu Leng 999 made international headlines last month when it was detained inside the Galapagos National Park with 300 tons of sharks, which it had received from four longliners belonging to Hong Long Fisheries and Ping Tan Marine Enterprises. The crew of the Fun Yuang Lu Leng 999 are now in an Ecuadorian jail, and the ship has been impounded and is scheduled to be sold off. The company who owns the Fun Yuang Lu Leng 999, Hong Long Fisheries, also owns the 15 vessels operating in East Timor, although Pingtang Marine Enterprises, listed on the U.S. NASDAQ, have announced to their shareholders that they also own the 15 vessels and licenses operating in East Timor. The fishing companies have a complex intertwined relationship, both based in Fuzhou, China, and owned by the Zhao families. Pingtang was kicked out of Indonesia by Fisheries Minister Sis in 2014, and so far have not been allowed to return. With public calls from people in East Timor claiming they have no way of knowing what the fleet are up to out of sight of land, Sea Shepherd decided to send the Ocean Warrior on a reconnaissance mission to gather and document evidence. This evidence was handed over to the authorities and people of East Timor in hopes that they may be able to cancel future licenses that are being seriously abused. During the September 9th inspections, an entire catalog of images and documentation has been formed and shared with the East Timorese National Police and other authorities. Campaign leader and Sea Shepherd's Global Director for Asia, Gary Stokes, also met today with East Timor's former Prime Minister and President and Nobel Peace Prize winner, Dr. José Ramos Horta. Unscrupulous foreign commercial fishing activities must be stopped in East Timor, said Dr. Ramos Horta. We must protect our natural resources. This is an outrage. An epic victory. Klamath Old Growth has been saved from logging in this story by Tom Wheeler of the Environmental Protection Information Center. As you remember, because you heard it right here on Earth First Update, EPIC had submitted an objection to the draft decision of the Horse Creek Project, a large-scale post-fire logging project on the Klamath National Forest. In our objection, we laid out measures that the Forest Service must take to avoid breaking the law. Here's the big news. The Forest Service listened. In total, the Forest Service agreed to drop 450 acres of the most controversial and harmful logging units protecting old growth along the Siskiyou Crest. They dropped 2 miles of road building. They are going to retain all large snags over 45 inches in diameter. They have committed to prescribed burning and fuels treatment. They will work with the Karuk tribe on vegetation planning. They will decommission new and existing temporary roads after the project is over and work with stakeholders to develop a burning plan. As a result of the agreement, the final project design will more closely mirror that of the Karuk Alternative, a post-fire restoration plan developed by the Karuk Tribe's Department of Natural Resources. In total, the project would provide rural jobs, protect the best old-growth wildlife habitat in the project area, and will begin to work on fuels reduction activities to protect homes and ranches from future fires. We are satisfied with this outcome as EPIC has pushed the Forest Service to adopt the Karuk Alternative. This was a large fire season and it's not over yet. National forests in the area will undoubtedly feel pressure to log trees that were damaged by the fires. We hope that the framework of the final Horse Creek project is something we can build on when developing future projects with the Klamath National Forest. And if you want more information, you can contact EPIC at wildcalifornia.org. That's wildcalifornia.org. And Siskiyou Crest is one of the most biologically, botanically, and geologically special places in the world in this story from Klamath Siskiyou Wild. As a rare east-west-oriented mountain range, it connects the plants and animals of the Klamath Coast Range, Cascade, and Sierra Mountains. It is also a climate change refuge for plants and animals and a recreational wonderland. This is no place for clear-cut logging. Following the 2016 fire, Klamath National Forest timber planters targeted old-growth Shasta red fir forest near Condre Mountain for clear-cutting and new logging roads. Klamath Siskiyou Wild responded by teaming up with our tribal and conservation allies to promote the Karuk Alternative, which would protect the crest while focusing fuels and restoration activities at lower elevations around key roads, homes, and communities. And they're also pleased to announce that their hard work paid off. The hundreds of acres of recovering post-fire Siskiyou Crest old-growth stands are now saved, and real fuels reduction and restoration work will help protect homes and ranches from fire. So, you can get in touch with Klamath Siskiyou Wild at kswild.org. That's kswild.org. And from the Earth First Newswire, going to Canada, Indigenous people are occupying illegal fish farms, in this story from Submedia. After 30 years of peaceful opposition, Indigenous nations of Western Canada have had enough and have begun occupations of illegal fish farms to disrupt their operations. A call has been made to occupy the offices of the ruling New Democratic Party of British Columbia to help put an end to the harmful practice of fish farms, which endanger local salmon populations. And you can find out more at cleansingourwaters.com. That's cleansingourwaters.com. And also from the Earth First Newswire, we read this story: land rights justify increasing struggles from Indonesia. In this story by Vincent Bevins of the Guardian newspaper. It is cold and late on the Indonesian island of Sumatra. Huddled around a map, a group of elders are planning their battle strategy. In a milestone victory last year, they were promised rights to the land their village has controlled for generations, but today they have had bad news. The local inspector wants to slice off a piece of the forest where they harvest benzoin, a substance like frankincense, and give it to a large pulp company. The natives see this as a betrayal. The elders debate in a mix of languages, Batak and Bahasa Indonesian, while sipping tea and planning how they will resume the fight the next day. For years, almost every day has involved this kind of planning. "We continue the battle. It's our only option," said Arnold Lumban Batu, as the group confers with two members of the local community rights organization. "Honestly, many of us would rather die than lose." Members of the small Panduman Siputuhuata indigenous community are at the center of a historic struggle that might just transform the rules of capitalism in Indonesia, affecting tens of millions of people. Along with a handful of other communities, they have cited indigenous rights provisions in the Constitution and lobbied to secure President Joko Widodo's support with the hope that they will be granted legal control over their traditional lands. Other Indonesians in this vast country of rainforests and more than 13,000 islands are watching closely lest the campaign should provide a model they can emulate. Many land experts, human rights activists, and environmentalists believe the approach adopted by the community may be Indonesia's best chance to sort out a muddled and exploitive system of laws that has been in place since a violent U.S.-backed dictatorship essentially took all the land to distribute to its cronies. But success is far from guaranteed. Political support in Jakarta, the capital, may be fickle, and there are numerous logistical battles. And from the American Bird Conservancy, we read that feral cats have been caught on camera endangering wild Hawaiian gallinules. Hawaiian common gallinule is the latest victims of feral cat predation of an endangered species on the Hawaiian island of Kauai. The attacks were captured on remote cameras installed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in partnership with the American Bird Conservancy. A pair of breeding adults was attacked and killed while sitting on their nest in a national wildlife refuge in late April. With no adults left to tend the nest, the birds' remaining three eggs and two hatchlings did not survive. Parents incubating eggs on two other nests were also killed by a feral cat on April 22nd and May 19th, and six more eggs subsequently failed to hatch. This predation by cats on endangered birds represents a major setback for conservation's efforts and is a harsh reminder of the dangers feral cats and other invasive animals create for Hawaii's native species, said Grant Scissormore, ABC's Director of Invasive Species Programs. Feral cats, whether they are dumped on the wildlife refuge by irresponsible owners or they find their way into the refuge from nearby feral cat feeding stations, are having a very significant and tragic impact on the Hanalei National Wildlife Refuge's endangered birds, said Fish and Wildlife Service Director Deputy Project Leader Michael Mitchell. Throughout Kauai, natural resource managers are doing everything they can to save our native birds, but some species are running out of time, and extinction is forever. Conservation of one of the nation's fastest disappearing birds took a step back in August when the U.S. Department of Interior ordered revisions to the Greater Sage-Grouse Management Plans, opening the door to expanded development across the American West. Habitat protection for the grouse is already at a minimum level based on the plans put in place just 2 years ago, said Steve Homer, Vice President of Policy at American Bird Conservancy. Weakening these plans puts the grouse at a grave risk of further population declines. In addition to one of the West's most iconic species, more than 350 species of high plains birds and wildlife are also at a stake. The existing grouse conservation plans were designed to halt the loss of sage-grouse habitat and to balance conservation with limited oil and gas drilling, mining, and renewable energy development. They also include safeguards for adaptive management and mitigation should grouse populations continue to decline, bolstering the decision not to list the greater sage-grouse under the Endangered Species Act. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 and www.freakradio.org. You can listen to a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon, that's Friday at 3 p.m., during our Environment Friday programming. You can also listen to WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts on Friday at 5:30 in the morning, KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon, or KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill and Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, and Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 in Berkeley, California. All rebroadcast the Earth First Update. Check their websites for the time and date. You could also listen to the Grateful Dread Public Radio online at gdprnashville.org. That's gdprnashville.org, Sundays at 2 a.m. Or you could always go to radioforall.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous Earth First Updates anytime you want. That's radio4all.net. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening. And please do tune in next Thursday evening for another edition of the Earth First Update.